This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about ripple effects. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. In science, one small discovery can lead to another and then another. Eventually, there's a breakthrough. Once the breakthrough happens, it's easy to forget about the road that brought us there, the basic science that made it happen. That kind of research often becomes a target when spending cuts are looming, because it can seem silly or superfluous. Alan Yoop takes a look at one study from the 1980s that has had a powerful ripple effect. Its results have now changed the lives of millions of people around the globe.
In the summer of 1980, gastroenterologist Jean-Pierre Rauffman got his first position at the National Institutes of Health after medical residencies and fellowships. The research did not seem especially glamorous. His job was to take pancreases from guinea pigs and essentially dose them with venom from various animals like bees, wasps, snakes, frogs, and lizards.
That it was a step-by-step addition of known amounts of each of these venoms to a test tube containing bits of pancreas.
So every day for weeks, he would dissolve powdered venom into water, add it to test tubes with bits of guinea pig pancreas, and see what happened. This was part of a research project on the digestive system. The pancreas plays an important role here, since it produces enzymes that help digest our food. And the researcher Jean-Pierre was working for wanted to know if there was anything in venom that would trigger the system to release more digestive enzymes, digest food more quickly. Day in and day out, Jean-Pierre tested different venoms.
It can be quite tedious. The hope is that in the end run that you discover something interesting. And it's even more tedious if the experiment fails. You can do all of that and end up with nothing.
But Jean-Pierre was not thinking about failure. It was partly about the journey.
I found it intellectually interesting. I was young and perhaps naive at the time. But I thought it was a great project. And from a training point of view, I would learn a lot of methods in doing this kind of work, which I did.
Eventually, after lots of tests, Jean-Pierre found that the venom that triggered the biggest reaction in the guinea pig pancreas came from the Gila monster. It's a large orange and black lizard that can grow up to 22 inches. It lives in deserts in the southwestern part of the U.S. and hunts with its powerful jaws.
And they usually grab onto a mouse or another rodent in the desert and either break its neck just with the strong jaws, or just hold on to it until it eventually succumbs.
It's also one of the rare lizards that have venom. Jean-Pierre and his colleagues talked about what they found in Gila monster venom at conferences with other gastroenterologists and published their findings.
It was seemingly an interesting biological finding. Would never have conceived that there was any potential therapeutic benefit for anything. To my recollection, I never tested it in human cells.
Jean-Pierre later isolated the specific protein in the venom that the guinea pig pancreas reacted to and published about that as well. Then he got a different job in Brooklyn, where he met another young scientist who was also interested in the venom. They continued to work on the specific protein. They figured out the shape of the protein, what it does, and also how to make it in a lab without using a Gila monster sample. They found that the protein works like a hormone called GLP-1, a hormone that humans have, which triggers the pancreas to release insulin.
And we saw that paper and we said, why would the lizard have something like GLP-1 in its saliva? Is this lizard GLP-1? Does the lizard have a separate GLP-1?
That's endocrinologist Daniel Drucker at the University of Toronto. He was interested in GLP-1 around the same time, in the 1980s.
Right away, there was a realization that something that stimulates insulin secretion could be used for the treatment of diabetes. We all immediately thought about this.
Insulin helps keep blood sugar within healthy levels. Daniel said scientists at the time were trying to make a human diabetes treatment based on GLP-1, But they struggled because humans would naturally break down the hormone. And if they got too much of it too quickly, they got sick. So when he heard about the work on the Gila monster venom, he tried to get samples.
You can't just go online and click on live Gila monster and push send.
Daniel and other scientists worked for weeks to ship a live lizard from the US to Toronto and cut out the gland that makes the venom. They studied the genes of the protein from the venom and published that work. Other researchers started testing GLP-1 in humans in the late 80s. The work continued in the 90s and early 2000s. It took a while because scientists at first struggled to make a version of the drug that would be stable in the human body long enough to work. And they had to balance a dose that was large enough to be effective but would not make people nauseous. Finally, in 2005, decades after Jean-Pierre first studied Gila monster venom, he and Daniel and other researchers saw their work lead to an approved GLP-1 therapy in the US to treat diabetes.
We didn't know that GLP-1 would reduce appetite and be useful for weight loss. We didn't know that GLP-1 would reduce heart attacks and strokes and improve metabolic liver disease and all of the things that GLP-1 does now.
The GLP-1 therapy led to the drug we now know as Ozempic. It's a blockbuster drug. Millions of people have prescriptions for GLP-1 medications. But it took a lot of basic science to get to this point. Daniel says his work is about learning more about the world, rather than applied science, which tries to find ways to use that knowledge.
We would often do experiments in animals and say, hey, this would work, this strategy would work. And then the pharmaceutical or biotech companies would say, well, let's try and develop drugs based on these findings.
Jean-Pierre is now a professor of medicine and the chair of the gastroenterology department at the University of Maryland. He says he is not sure if the National Institutes of Health today would ever fund research like that again. He says the NIH now sets a high bar for researchers to show that their work is likely to translate to treating human disease in some way. That was not the case back when he did his early research.
This would be considered by NIH study sections and others as sort of a fishing expedition. If you were a betting person, you'd probably bet that we'd end up with nothing.
And he says it could have ended up with no useful human application, but you never know unless you try.
It's very rare, frankly, that something goes this way, and that frequently it's a combination of luck, some intelligence, some foresight, you know, into doing the right experiments. Nobody knew where it would lead, and several of the participants are unfortunately now deceased, so really haven't seen what's happened with this.
Jean-Pierre says he's happy that he got to see how his research from decades ago ultimately played out.
What's happened recently has allowed me to sort of look at it from a longer view, you know, to really get a sort of global perspective of the work and where it's led, and I find it very interesting, very cool.
That story was reported by Alan Yu.